Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Firehouse.com, Billy Goldfeder, and we're live from FDIC in Indianapolis, 2007. We are actually live here at the Total Fire Group Morning Pride booth. Things got a little noisy in the hallway we were working on, so we were able to get a booth space here to operate in, and we sure do appreciate it. Got a lot to do in the show this week. We've got guests, Wendy Norris from the Phoenix Project Online. You're going to hear Wendy's story when she was a firefighter about a decade ago, being trapped in a building, getting burned and injured, and the resulting activities that occurred following her event. We've got representatives from the People's Burn Foundation, who are known, well known to most fire departments, I would hope, for the Hell and Back series. They did the Hell and Back program last year that focuses on burn injuries, where they interviewed some civilians, some painters. I think that's kind of what everybody remembers them as, the painters who got burnt. But they've just now released the newest Hell and Back series, Hell and Back 2, and that program features firefighters who've been burned. You do not want to miss that discussion, nor do you want to miss getting that program. And online right here, if you click below, you'll see the link to the People's Burn Foundation where you can get further information. Representing the People's Burn Foundation today are Executive Director Sean Longrich, Sean Grass, Brian Windsor, Rob Coco, Andy Sippy Byron, and if you've ever been to any of my seminars, you know who old Sippy Cup is, and Brian Alkire. And certainly, last but not least, we've got some discussions with Jen Whitestone, Jen Manning, and Mike Wilbur, who's a freaking groupie to this show. And we're going to be talking about the Seatbelt Project, but how they're doing body scanning of firefighters to better identify what we truly need when it comes to seats, seatbelts, bunker gear, and almost anything that has to do with our ability to do the job better. So it should be a pretty interesting discussion. Prior to that, I've got a couple comments I want to share with you. First of all, our hats and our hearts. Our hats go off and our hearts are ripped after what happened in Blacksburg, Virginia this past week. Those of us who are parents, or any of us, I mean, we're all impacted, but certainly those of us parents who've got kids in school can certainly relate to the situation that went down there. Murderous, horrendous. I know it brought me to tears. But my intention of commenting right now is to salute the following organizations. The Blacksburg Volunteer Fire Department, an all-volunteer department responding in and assisting that terrible day. I know that they were involved actually in my class here with Gordon Graham at FDIC. There were members of the Blacksburg Fire Department had to leave that night and proceed over to and head home to help deal with the situation that's going to last a long time in Blacksburg. And then, of course, the members of the Blacksburg Volunteer Rescue Squad, again, a 100% volunteer EMS organization, which provides pre-hospital care to the sick and injured in Blacksburg and the surrounding communities. And then, I guess, a real special note to the members. You know what? I was just handed a letter from the chief of the Blacksburg Volunteer Rescue Squad. I'll share that with you real quickly, related to the Virginia Tech shooting. The Blacksburg Volunteer Rescue Squad would like to thank all agencies that have offered support since the Virginia Tech tragedy. The response from the EMS and fire community has been overwhelming, and we are truly appreciative of all the offers of help. Fortunately, our agency and crews from the surrounding jurisdictions have been able to keep up with our duties. I think many of the providers involved have felt the need to remain active today and the days to come in an effort to regain some sense of normalcy here in Blacksburg. We have received hundreds of phone calls and emails of support from all over the country, and we cannot thank you enough. We would like everyone to know that we're moving forward and are grateful to know that we have such a huge support base behind us, and that's signed from Sid, the rescue squad chief down there in Blacksburg. But I guess the other comment I wanted to make is many of you may not be aware, but the actual first responders of Virginia Tech are the members of the Virginia Tech Rescue Squad, which is a rescue squad, an EMS agency that is basically on the campus of Virginia Tech. It's a volunteer student-run organization, and they provide service 365 days a year. They do almost 1,000 runs a year. They were formed in 1969 by the students to provide EMS to the students of Virginia Tech. Amazingly and horrifically, they were alerted the other morning to respond in to what they soon found out will be the worst response probably and hopefully they ever go to in their careers. Hopefully they've never seen anything worse than that. So to the members of the Blacksburg Volunteer Fire Department, the Blacksburg Volunteer Rescue Squad, and especially the Virginia Tech Rescue Squad, our hats off to all of you. We've got all of you in our prayers, and it's us responding with you as far as we're concerned. A couple items in the news. Chris Kangas, the junior firefighter from Pennsylvania, the ruling was made yesterday at the federal court level that he is not a firefighter for the purposes of line of duty death benefits. So that's certainly interesting. We're going to be following that. My understanding is the family does plan to appeal to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. As some of you may remember, Chris, 14 years old, was responding to the firehouse, answering an alarm. He was riding his bike and he was tragically struck by a car while responding in. And the debate amongst the fire service, and certainly I guess at the federal court level, is the fact that yes, he was a member of the fire department, but by law in Pennsylvania, he is not truly a firefighter in the eyes of the law. Not necessarily the opinion of this speaker, myself, or firehouse.com or anybody else, but that's how it's turned out right now. It does not diminish the dedication that this 14-year-old had for his department. It does not diminish the tragic loss, but apparently, at least according to the courts now, the fact of the matter is, by law, he's not a firefighter. His family is not qualified to receive the federal PSOB death benefits. So we'll see where that goes in the coming days. In other news, Kyle Wilson, the firefighter technician from Prince William County, Virginia, who died tragically last Monday in a house fire. I've got a release from Prince William County right now. They've completed a preliminary review of the Monday morning fire that damaged that house on March Landing Drive in Woodbridge and killed firefighter Kyle Wilson. At 6:03 that morning, the initial alarm was dispatched for a single-family house fire on Marsh Overlook Drive. Amongst the response was Engine 512, Tower 512, Medic 512 from the OWL Station Number 12 in Woodbridge, Virginia. They responded and arrived at 6:09. They discovered fire on the exterior of the structure involving the side and the back of the house. Vehicles were in the driveway and the garage. Believing that occupants might still be inside, which I believe any of us would have thought, an aggressive interior search was initiated with Lieutenant Jason Reese and Technician 1, Kyle Wilson, going to the second floor to begin search and rescue efforts. Conditions inside the home were initially clear. This is amazing. Listen to this. Conditions inside the home were initially clear with full visibility and very little smoke. Lieutenant Reese and Technician Wilson, and Technician, by the way, in that area of the country, is a firefighter one, an entry-level firefighter. Technician Wilson had 9 months on the job, 22 years old. Reese and Wilson were able to do a search in the large master bedroom suite, standing up and walking through the area. So it apparently the conditions were obviously not real difficult. During the search, the bedroom door suddenly slammed shut. Not finding any occupants in the master bedroom, they opened the door to search the remainder of the second floor, and they found conditions in the hallway had dramatically changed to zero visibility and extraordinary intense heat. Lieutenant Reese and Technician Wilson were together and attempted to exit the structure immediately. At this time, a catastrophic fire event occurred. Conditions inside the home quickly deteriorated from a light haze to heavy smoke, a heavy fire with thick black smoke and intense heat. Instantly, this happened. At almost the same time, the roof and ceiling collapsed onto the second floor. The force of this event separated the lieutenant and Wilson, resulting in Lieutenant Reese falling down the stairs. So some of you who are wondering how they got separated, and any of us as officers know, you never want to lose your probie. And certainly Lieutenant Reese was doing everything he could to keep that kid with him. Technician Wilson, because of that collapse, and Lieutenant Reese dropping and falling down the stairs, was forced in a different direction. A mayday was declared at 6:15. That's 12 minutes after the initial dispatch. Technician Wilson activated his emergency button and provided an emergency radio report. Lieutenant Reese and several other crews made several very heroic and valiant attempts to respond to the Mayday calls and locate Technician Wilson. Lieutenant Reese suffered serious burns, second-degree burns to both ears and fingers in those attempts. Initial reports demonstrate that fire and rescue crews were following procedure by working in pairs and maintaining physical contact until the catastrophic fire event forcibly separated them. The severe wind conditions, reported to be in 50 and 60 mile an hour winds, also had an effect on the intensity and rapid spread of fire. We've certainly read and followed stories. What comes to mind is the fire in the Rockaways a couple years ago, where several New York City firefighters lost their lives when the winds coming off the ocean just blew right through that house or that multifamily dwelling and created a blowtorch effect, as described by a lot of the firefighters there. The loss of the fire is $650,000, but that's nothing compared to the loss of firefighter Kyle Wilson. Firefighter Wilson of IAFF Local 2598, Prince William County, Virginia, died, as I said, on Monday, the 16th of April, from smoke inhalation and burns while fighting a house fire. And the viewing will be held on Friday, the 20th. And for further information, you can click the link below or just Google Prince William County Fire and Rescue, and they'll provide that information to you. Actually, I've got a website. It's www.pwcgov.org. www.pwc, as in Prince William County, gov.org. And there'll be some donations available, or rather some links to make donations in and stuff like that. So again, our hearts and prayers go out to the members of the Prince William County Fire Department, Fire and Rescue Service, but most especially the crews involved in this fire and the families of firefighter Kyle Wilson. Another tragic event that occurred this week in Ohio, actually not too far from where I work. One firefighter is still in critical condition and another is being treated for a head injury after an incident during a training exercise. In Hamilton, Ohio, fire department, which is 100% career fire department, the Hamilton, Ohio Fire Department was conducting its annual river rescue drill Tuesday at a water-controlled dam in the Great Miami River near Hamilton when one of the boats was drawn into a low dam along the river and it overturned, throwing firefighters into the water. A quote from fire investigator Tom Angst, "We think the front boat went across the boil line, and when the other boat tried to peel out at that point, then we're not sure what happened. A second boat attempting a rescue of the two men was also overturned moments later. One of the firefighters got caught in the dam's boils, which circulate water at each end of the structure, and he remained tragically stuck there for nearly 30 minutes while other firefighters heroically attempted to free him." Fire Chief Joe Shute said the training was conducted in the area of the river because of past drownings at the dam, so what they were doing was training there so they'd be prepared for any drowning incidents they'd be called to dispatch on, that they would be called to respond to, including the rescue of a jet ski rider in 05 and the deaths of two men thrown from a boat in 03. Firefighter Chris Gabbard remains in critical condition at University of Cincinnati Hospital, and they're also transferring firefighter John Hansbauer to that hospital as well, which is a level one trauma center in the Cincinnati area, due to a change in his condition, so that's not good news. The other firefighters, Dan Bauman and Dan Bagley, were treated for minor injuries and released. And at this point, all we can do is offer our prayers to the firefighters that were involved, and especially the families of firefighter Chris Gabbard and firefighter John Hansbauer. And my final comment before we go to our interviews this week is related to the way the federal government continues to dump on firefighters. Odds are, if you're going to die in a line of duty, it will be a heart attack or stroke related to your death. Another situation has occurred where federal benefits are being denied by the Federal Department of Justice to firefighters who've died in a line of duty due to heart attack or stroke. I'm not going to rant on too long on this, but I'll tell you this, gang. If you die from a heart attack or stroke tomorrow, your family will not be taken care of by the federal government, and that has got to piss you off. We have firefighters that are risking their lives, and you know what? If someone's too fat, if they're overweight, that's not your concern. The fact of the matter is they were going to fires, they were functioning in their jobs. We'll debate the fat and the fitness issue another time. But as long as they were going to calls, they're wearing their gear, they're attending training, and they're involved in doing a job that you and I are doing every day, if they die in the confines of that job, they're entitled to be taken care of. And the bureaucrats over at the Department of Justice continue to jack everybody around in this issue, and it's time you contact your congressman, contact your senator, whatever. This is simple. It's 50 of us die a year. It would be nice if the federal government would quit dumping on us. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke. We're live at FDIC on firehouse.com. I want to mention something, and please don't interpret this as self-serving or self-promoting. We're offering a video for sale called And the Beat Goes On. And this video is 100% profits going to, 50% of it going to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and 50% of it going to the Chief Ray Downey Scholarship Fund. This is a program I did a couple years ago related to firefighter safety and survival. The video is about 30-something bucks. There's a link down below. Again, 100% of all proceeds are going to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and the Chief Ray Downey Scholarship Fund. Your assistance in helping raise money to these two very valuable organizations would be greatly appreciated. And I want to mention specifically, the monies being given to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation from this project are being specifically directed to support family projects of those left behind and no other specific projects. Do a lot of great projects over there, but it was my desire that the project go directly to the family support programs. Again, we're live at FDIC 2007. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. And again, down below, there's a link for you to click if you want to contact your congressman or your senator related to the fact that the Hometown Heroes, which is the name of the act that gave us the right to collect benefits if we die in a line of duty from a heart attack or stroke. It's a funny name, Hometown Heroes, because we're being treated by like a bunch of hometown schlumps. Those who've lost their lives are being ignored. 50 of us a year die of heart attack and stroke and are jacking us around. You need to wake up, click the link, send your congressman an email, and make them earn their keep in Washington. All right, wow, I've got a good friend who I've come to know over the last year or so. Wendy Norris is our first guest on Through the Smoke. Wendy is involved in the Phoenix Project for Injured Emergency Workers. And what I want to talk to you about is the fact that, you know, I certainly spend a lot of time and a lot of other people spend a lot of time focused on firefighter death. And we need to. We need to do what we can to reduce firefighter death and injury. But, you know, I had a friend years ago. He was the tightest son of a gun you ever met in your life. He still has his first paycheck. And I remember he used to say, well, if you take care of the nickels, the dollars take care of themselves. And I started thinking that applies to this situation. If we take care of the injuries, the deaths are going to take care of themselves. If we focus on minimizing the injuries, the end result will be less deaths. So it kind of makes a lot of sense. And I got to know Wendy a little bit. Wendy's a fire chaplain for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. She's also a firefighter. And she had an event she's going to talk about 10 years ago. But her and I were talking, and I said, you know, there's no organization out there nationally that's focused on helping firefighters who were injured in the line of duty. There's different ones like the burn foundations and things like that if you're burned. But it depends where you live. If you live in New York City, you'll be treated like gold. You'll be embraced, you'll be loved, you'll be immediately taken care of. But if you live in Boohoo, wherever you live, and there's no strong support for firefighter injury in your community, you're screwed. And maybe there needs to be a national focus, a national organization on trying to support, standardly support firefighters who've been injured. And that's what Wendy's involved in. So Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chief, for having me.
Why don't you tell us about the Phoenix Project? What are you doing? Actually, you know what? Don't tell us that. Wait a minute. Tell us about what happened to you 10 years ago.
10 years ago, I was involved in a structure fire. My history as a firefighter was I was a specialty in industrial firefighting, and so that's where my training was focused on. But I grew up in a volunteer fire department, and those were the departments that put me through the fire academy and through my fire training. And I wanted to keep up my fire suppression side in the community, and so I had always been a member of a volunteer fire department. And at the time of my injury, I was working a structure fire that was quite large, that had a lot of different agencies that were
involved. What was on fire?
It was an apartment structure that was located on a lake, and so they had balconies on one side and then outdoor hallways on the other side, and it was an L-shaped structure. The four stories top floor was completely involved on one side of the structure.
Okay.
And so we had multi-agencies there. We had a big municipal fire department, several volunteer fire departments, and combo departments. But the problem with this fire was there was three command systems that were set up in place. This was 10 years ago.
Down in Texas. Three commands at a fire. That's unusual.
I think
I'm sort of being cynical because nowadays it's better.
It is better. Hopefully it's getting better. But
some shit still amazes us, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that because of issues that were involved and they didn't want to discuss tactics that were going on in the scene, there was a lot of communication errors that led to the injury that I had. Just to make that story short, we were part of the roof had started collapsing on one side of the building, and so they said that they wanted no more firefighters in that area, but yet we were sent back into that area later.
Where were you?
We were coming up from the other side of the structure, being led in by one department that was with one command center, but yet I was with a fire department that was with another command center, so the communication was not there between those two command centers.
Okay.
And so we were led from one side of the building that was still, we were trying to protect, into the area that they had just deemed unsafe for the firefighters. What we were protecting, we had no idea. They just said that there was a fire in the kitchen that they wanted us to put out, and so that's
what kind of line did you have with you?
We had a 2.5 inch.
Okay, yeah. Good. Big water. Good for you.
We had a lot of water.
Right.
But there was not enough slack to be able to go and make entry into this unit because of we were on an L-shaped corner there. And so my partner, who was on the nozzle, told me to go out and get him slack so he could be able to reach the fire that was in the kitchen.
Okay.
And so as soon as I drug the hose into the hallway there, he felt the slack and he opened up the line. And because the truss roofing was so weak from the fire that already had caused the damage, when he opened up that line, the pressure from the water collapsed the roof and a beam on top of me. It knocked my face mask off, causing me to get trapped for just a little bit of
what
time.
What hit you, the hose stream or the hose itself?
The roof.
Oh, the roof came down on you.
The roof came down.
Okay.
And pinned me for just a little bit, but I had superheated gases that I
sucked in. What was going through your head?
You know what? I don't even remember. I just remembered I needed to get out of there as soon as I could. And
good.
I was able to get out. And
you got out on your own?
I had several individuals that were standing outside of the doorway that assisted me down
to pull you out.
Right. From then, I was taken to a local hospital.
Did you realize you were hurt?
Yes, I did, but I didn't realize the extent of the injuries at that time. I just knew that I had been burned. I knew I had sucked in a bunch of gases. I didn't realize that I had a closed head injury at the time. That was not discovered until later on in the process. But I was taken to a local hospital and then later transferred over to a trauma hospital that had a burn center, and then later transferred over to a hospital that dealt with pulmonary injuries and pulmonary burns.
Okay, talk to us about your injuries.
The injuries that I sustained were burns to my upper and lower respiratory tract, including my lungs. I lost a lot of my lung function. I had a brain...
Does that still remain today?
It does still remain today, and I can still remember the day that my pulmonologist came in and told me that I was no longer able to be a firefighter. It was career-ending injuries because of the extent of the burns and the extent of the injuries to my lungs itself. I was no longer able to go in and be a structural firefighter anymore. And then I had a closed head injury where I had to learn how to walk again and read.
Wow.
And do a lot of math. All the small motor function skills, I had to go through therapy again to learn how to do some basic functions. I had a lot of memory loss, a lot of basic education that you learn in elementary school. I got wiped away just from that one accident.
Just to you were in a helmet.
Yes.
Did your helmet get knocked off?
No, it was just the force from
just
the beam
force
itself.
Of it. So it was just enough force where the helmet mattered to some extent. It probably saved your life.
Right.
But it didn't stop you from getting a head injury.
Right.
Which, I mean, at some point, your gear's only going to work so well.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, and then it knocked your mask off.
Right.
would the beam coming down knock your mask off?
It hit right where the SCBA connects to the face mask, and that was enough force to be able to move it over to the side. It wasn't knocked completely off. It was just shifted over to the side of my face.
But at that point, as any of us would have done, we'd start breathing.
Right.
And you inhaled the smoke and gases. What was the visibility in that area at the time?
It was complete visibility. As a matter of fact, when I had walked into that particular apartment unit, the ceiling in the living room was completely gone. I could see the blue sky from that area. So what we were even doing in that unit, there was no life to be saved. There was really no property.
But you had fire conditions.
But we had some sort of
fire
conditions.
So that's what you inhaled.
Right. We had steam and superheated gas. Steam was being converted from the hose, the water.
From the heat, right.
Right. That was coming through a small hole that where my head was at when I was knocked down.
So all the moon and the stars were lined up perfectly for you to get this situation.
Yes.
All right. So now you're in the hospital. You have to go through all this rehab. Tell us about your rehab process. You had several, right? You had burn injuries, you had respiratory, you had brain injuries.
Right.
Any other trauma? Broken bones?
No other trauma
so
other than that.
Closed head injury, respiratory, and the burns. Okay, right. Go ahead.
The process was an ongoing process. I had to go and do the physical rehab. I had to see pulmonologists. I was actually seen by physicians that worked previously at NASA that were trying to study the burns in my lungs. I was put into, there was a firefighter injury study that was going on the time that they had entered me into, and I can't remember who that was through at the time, but there was a long process of just trying
How
to
long?
Get the lung. About a year.
A year process? How long till you could walk again?
It was just a matter of keeping steady and being able to walk great distances.
So you had to think to walk
had
as opposed
to
we just normally walk without thinking.
Right.
So you had to engage yourself to think to walk.
Right. And I think that process took about 6 months, 4 to 6 months.
Okay. So what about your respiratory? I guess the respiratory was the most serious of everything?
Right. I think at one time...
The least recuperable, if that's a word?
Yeah. I had oxygen at some point in time that I needed to use in order to deliver medication to my lungs. I think at some points in time I was on 20-something different medications just to be able to survive. There was just a lot of processes involved in order to recover from this. And even today, I have to watch myself in the exercise that I do. If I don't exercise on a regular basis, I start losing lung capacity, and I can tell the differences between a day that I don't do exercise and a day that I don't. I have a lot of what's called reactive airway now, where if I'm around a lot of smoke or other chemicals or things like that, my lungs can start closing up on me just as a reaction.
So your sensitivity levels are greatly heightened.
Yes.
Now, you are an active firefighter, but exterior now?
I am not a suppression firefighter. Most of what I do is in the EMS sector,
right.
Rescue. I do help somewhat in clean up and operations, but I have to be very careful in what I can and can't do. I don't want to take away what lung parts I do
sure.
have left.
Sure.
So.
Well, let's look at from the time it happened to the today, the focus of our discussion. First of all, I guess I want to ask you, who was your immediate support group at the time? I'm talking about your family related to your emotional toll. Were you guys married at the time?
Yes.
You were, okay. And we've got Wendy's husband here, John, as well, who's a career lieutenant or captain?
Captain.
Captain in the Houston Fire Department. So it was a family affair, so to speak. So you were by her side, and that's certainly an important thing. But let's talk more on the issues of how you were responded to by your fire department, which was under a transition of being disbanded and taken over by another one at the time. So
right.
You sort of lost it. You were like a lost in the moving process almost, right?
We were. We were just about 3 months out from merging with another local fire department because the department that I was with when I was injured had was being taken over by the Houston Fire Department, the land that they were covering.
Right.
There was a lot of
annexation
that was going
uh-huh.
on. And so it was a very small volunteer fire department, maybe about 25 people that were involved in there.
Uh-huh.
But we had a lot of things lined up with our trucks being sold, our gear being sold to other departments. The department we were going to merge with was a very wealthy department that didn't need our equipment, and so we're getting ready to get
rid of that. So it wasn't a normal time. It was a very busy time with a lot of other focus on other stuff, and here you get hurt.
Right. When I got injured and was placed in the hospital, my husband was on duty at the time, but I had no representation from the fire department.
Your fire department?
From any fire department.
Why not?
I have no idea why that happened.
Because you're a woman?
It was brought up at some point in time that because I was a female firefighter, I shouldn't have been in that situation, or I couldn't handle my job. It was my fault that I was injured. There was a lot of different things that were brought up at that point in time.
Because you were married to one of them bad Houston firefighters?
Probably. They might have been a little upset about that. But we also have a lot of friends that were in the fire department as well, and both sides. And even our friends didn't even come to the hospital to see us.
I don't understand it. I got to say something to you. I talked to my crew at home in Ohio. We're right outside of Cincinnati. And some of our firefighters and officers are involved in the CISM program. And obviously I want to respect the privacy of this. But I can tell you when they responded to assist the Hamilton Fire Department with the near drowning that happened this week, when they arrived, they said the Cincinnati firefighters were packed. They were deployed there. They were there to support. They were there to help. And it's foreign to me to not see that. Mm-hmm. I know in our department, the few line of duty desks we've had nearby, our chief, the last one we had in a neighboring department, our chief deployed myself and about six firefighters on a heavy rescue. We went and picked up food, brought it right to the firehouse of the fallen firefighter, and offered everything. So when you first told me your story, certainly I was shook and sad by your injuries, but you've recovered for the most part.
Right.
What really shook me is how you were not treated. And I don't care if you're a boy, girl, or, you know, whatever you are. The fact of the matter is that this blows another hole in the brotherhood, mm-hmm. sisterhood thing. And probably not a big one, because I'm sorry to tell you, that's not normal what happened to you. I can tell you where Pete's from, where Chris, who are producers, and many of the folks here, you're hurt. Boom, we're there. We're there to the point where you got to ask us to leave. Now, I do know that there's another story and of another firefighter who was burned down in Mississippi a couple years ago, and he also was met with a similar response. So I don't understand what's going on.
There are several responses. I mean, we had no firefighters that came and visited us, even from John's fire department. I thought that maybe with Houston and some of our friends that were involved with the Houston Fire Department, some of the people that we knew, we actually lost a lot of friendships through this. And I think maybe part of the problem is you can't see the injuries that I had. My injuries are internal, and so maybe they can't relate to that.
Didn't look so bad.
Right, right. We had a lot of problems with the financial aspect of things, too, because the fire department had said that they had an insurance policy that was going to take care of the needs that my medical needs. And come to find out, it was a very small policy that didn't really cover anything. And for those of you who have been in a burn unit, the first 30 minutes is astronomical in the coverage and
we've
cost.
Got some burn experts we're going to talk about in a minute.
Right.
But I've said this a million times, I'm going to say it again, I've done it in my writings and talking. You need to find out now what coverage you have.
Absolutely.
There are part-time firefighters, there are volunteer firefighters with great coverage, there are career firefighters with great coverage, but there are career, part-time, volunteer call firefighters, you ain't got shit and you don't realize it, and you need to look into it now. I apologize for cussing. I know some of you use this program for department training, and I know that's like against your EEO laws or something, so I'm sorry for cussing. I'll try not to do that. But I'm telling you, you've got to look right now and ask the question, what protection do I have if I break my leg, if I get burned, if I lose 30 days off the job? What's going to happen? So let's go back. So all this did was, I guess it pissed you off for a while. And that's not cussing, is it? Pissed off? Okay. It upset you. But now you're motivated.
Well, see, the thing is, when we were going through this, it was such a stressful time, of course, just trying to recover. And, of course, on our family, just being our marriage and in general. But really, everywhere I went, or just in the recovery process, how I was treated by the fire department, I was looking at fatalities, and I was going online and looking at these funerals and seeing how these fallen firefighters had these beautiful funerals. They were taken care of. Their families were taken care of.
Well, like Rich Duffy from the IFF says, we do beautiful funerals.
We do. And I just felt like they were so honored, and I just felt so ostracized, and I felt like I had done something wrong. And if only I had died in that fire, then my husband would have taken, I would have been honored. He would have been taken care of. My situation would have maybe saved another life. I don't know. I just really felt like I should have died in that fire instead of being injured. That's how badly I felt from that. And I was also made to feel that if you die in the line of duty, you're a hero. But if you're injured in the line of duty, you screwed up somewhere. And so therefore, you've got to pay for that that screw up somewhere along the lines. And in the work that I've done since then, and in working with injured firefighters, I have come into contact with a lot of firefighters who have had career-ending injuries that have had very similar experiences. Maybe they had the firefighter show up to their hospital bed directly after the injuries, but within weeks, they feel shunned or neglected. It just depends. But
well, there's a very human, I'm no sociologist or nothing, but there's a very human response to tragedy. It peaks, then it drops, and then it just peaks annually based upon an event. And they're going to see it down in Virginia. We saw it in 9/11. It's a very human response.
Absolutely.
So you personally, going through that, it's got to even be tougher and more lonely because of this lack of a support group. So you did your research, you looked into it. What motivated you to create the Phoenix Project Online, and what's your goals and objectives in doing that?
We started an organization with a program that centered on assisting injured firefighters and EMS workers in finding the support services that they need. It's like a social services organization that helps them with specific injuries, because sometimes firefighters do have injuries that are different from what a normal civilian might have. So we assist them in helping finding maybe specialists for their area of their injury. We assist them in finding resources that they need, counseling that they might need, issues on post-traumatic stress, just a support network for the fire service to be able to lean on each other and be able to know that we're not the only ones that are out there. And it is a good thing that you didn't die, and we can use your story to be able to help other firefighters from being injured in the line of duty or dying in the line of duty. The injuries that I carry, if there's a possibility that I could have some kind of reaction later on, and I could actually die from the injuries that I have 10 years later. And so there are other firefighters out there who could very well run into that same issue. And so basically it's a support services organization to be able to help other firefighters get through the trauma of being injured, whether it be physical or psychological.
I'm not telling you how to do your business, but I'm envisioning a guide. We've got several guides on what to do when a firefighter dies in the line of duty. Maybe we need a national guide on what to do when a firefighter is critically injured, in addition to what the obvious is, the EMS care and all that. But making sure a vigil is set up at the hospital, make sure this is communicated with this one. I don't know.
And also it's a support system for the department, too, deciding ahead of time what kind of capacity can we take care of a firefighter on a long-term basis. What are we going to do for that firefighter if the firefighter's in a burn unit for months on months at a time, or long-term rehab? What are we going to do for that firefighter? Can we handle that a year from now, 2 years from now? What ethically do we need to provide for this firefighter? So not just the firefighters themselves, but for the fire departments, for the families. We have a lot of family members who are frustrated with the system or feel left out. So it's all sides of the care for the firefighter in general.
Well, this is Wendy Norris we're talking to. The website, the links below, is thephoenixprojectonline.com. And Wendy's focus, along with the other folks that are working with her, is to provide injury information, hospital and physician information, resources for getting help, support, and encouragement to families of those who did not die, but who survived what may be career-ending injuries. Well, you're listening to RadioFirehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We will be right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
Welcome back. This is Through the Smoke at RadioFirehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're live at FDIC at the Total Fire Group Morning Pride booth. Thanks to them for allowing us to use their booth space here. They got a little office in the back of their booth. It got a little noisy in the halls, as you can imagine. FDIC, looks like FDIC may be approaching 30,000 attendees this year, and we're sure glad to be a part of that. And also, the positive relationship between the folks at Penwell and Cygnus in cooperation, allowing us to do the show here and stuff like that. So good stuff, good stuff. We just chatted with Wendy Norris, and really I think of that discussion, the most important thing that came out to me is for you now to look at your organization to see what would happen if a firefighter in your department was injured critically, what support systems are there, what's the insurance, what's your plan? There's 80,000 or so serious firefighter injuries a year, 100 deaths. We're prepared for funerals in a lot of cases. What about the injuries? And again, Wendy's website and the folks involved with her is the PhoenixProjectOnline.com. There's a link below. My next guest is Sean Longrich, as well as Sean Grass, Brian Windsor, Rob Coco, Andy Sippy Byron, and Brian Alkire. I should mention that Brian Windsor, Rob Coco, and Brian Alkire are all burn survivors and are involved with the People's Burn Foundation, of which Sean is the executive director. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you, Chief. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you guys were not really known by a lot of us until you came up with this To Hell and Back series, and I thought it was a guide for firefighters and chiefs dealing with budgets, but obviously it's much more serious. You didn't push the laugh button, Mike. There's supposed to be a big audience laughing. On a much more serious note, obviously the folks from the People's Burn Foundation are involved with the Hell and Back series and the To Hell and Back 2 series. Tell us what's going on with the project, Sean. I had an opportunity to be a narrator in the show, but I wasn't kidding yesterday when you guys unveiled the program. I had never watched it until yesterday. I didn't look at any of the editing stuff. It just needs to fall where it was with you people as the experts. Tell us what motivated you to get this project started in the beginning.
In the very beginning, it was a documentary called To Hell and Back, and that's where we came up with the name of the program. And our NBC affiliate in Indianapolis, very close to the foundation and our mission of preventing burn injuries, there was a horrific explosion on our interstate involving a box truck with 13 painters that were trapped alive.
That's where the painters program came from.
And that's what our firefighters are called, the painters program. And so in any event, our anchor went behind the scenes, took cameras into the burn unit, and for a year and a half, almost 2 years, followed the painters and their families. And it is a literal, real portrayal of what a burn injury is.
From a civilian standpoint.
Interesting,
because I know when I first got it, I was like, oh, this is civilians. But it was interesting enough to keep my attention and draw me into it. But the thirst, the hunger was, we need to talk about firefighters.
Right. And what we did was we took it to firefighters. You know, it wasn't the foundation's idea to say, hey, we need to launch this with firefighters. I took it to firefighters, and I said, you know, look, you know, there's 800,000 of you out there, and you're intentionally exposed to burn injuries every day. You are at greatest risk for burn injury, intentionally. And they hopped on it. You know, one of them wanted to take it out of my hand and take it into their recruit class that day. And so they decided, you know, look, let's put some experts together and see what they think. And so we did. We wrote a grant. It was an AFG grant with Homeland Security, $500,000 grant. We got the grant, put the team together, and, you know, it was their job to say, how do we tie it into the fire service? So we did, initially with two firefighters, one that had been burned, Brian Alkire, and another who had also been burned but lost a friend and lost a partner in line of duty.
Let me interrupt you for a minute. What we're going to do in a minute is I'm going to give each of you the mic for about 2 minutes to just briefly tell your story so the audience, I'm talking for those of you, obviously you can't see what I'm doing here, but we've got a whole booth full of folks here. And I'm going to ask each of you, so just kind of start thinking about what you want to talk about. And then Sippy and Sean, I'm going to pass it to the two of you, because you guys have been working with Sean being sort of the fire service representative. So just kind of think what the three of you want to talk about, just about each of you have about 2 minutes. So go ahead, Sean.
So in any event, we launched, what we did was, from the foundation's perspective, on a prevention level, we have to teach people about the skin. People do not understand that when you're burned from the inside out. You're not burned from the outside in unless it's a flame or a contact burn. It's the heat. When the heat hits your body, it does things internally. And so with gear and the advancements in gear, you know, firefighters think that they're protected from anything. You know, if your skin melts at 160 degrees, but your equipment or your bunker gear only protects you to 1,200, what's that tell you? Do the math. So, you know, they really focused on PPE.
Okay.
From, you know, our message was, look, your skin protects your body. And then they took it one step farther and said, your bunker gear protects your body like your skin, protects your skin like your skin protects your body. It was a phenomenal program. Tremendous success.
Sent to how many fire departments?
Every fire department in the United States received it, all 38,000.
And if their fire department did not get it, or if a firefighter listening to this did not get it, they can go to your website and get a copy? Is that
they can go to our website. It's online
right now. It's online.
It's online training.
So they can download it and watch it or whatever they need to do.
Right, People's Burn
Foundation. And that's the Sue Helen Back Part 1.
Right.
And we'll be talking about Part 2 in a second.
Right.
So
with that, now, and I do want to say that that's now mandatory training in many fire departments for Firefighter 1 and 2. It is mandatory in the state of Arizona for Firefighter 1 and 2, and I believe Firefighter or Sue Helen Back 2 will be mandatory for Fire Officer 1 and 2. So we're making, I mean, we'd like to make it mandatory everywhere.
It's made a difference. Here's an example where $500,000 from the fire grant really did make a difference.
Yes.
Because the whole fire grant thing is very debatable amongst a lot of circles of how money's being spent. Certainly it's a good thing, no question.
Right.
But here's one where you affected nationally the fire service for $500,000.
Right. So anyway, we launch it, and then firefighters just, they say, hey, we really want to use this documentary for our fifth grade class. You know, we think it can help our community. Can we cut out the documentary and build our own program around it? No. We need more situational awareness training. You teased us with it. You know, if you're going to do another one, would you please give us more situational awareness training? So we take all of that data, and we took it back to the team. And what we did this time was we created two teams, one for community and one for firefighter. So we created situational awareness to Helen Back 2. And that involves, that humanizes the burn injury to the firefighter.
And to Helen Back 2 is strictly firefighter burns.
Strictly firefighter burns.
And that's what they're going to learn about. They're going to hear the stories. You're going to see incredible simulations. I was absolutely impressed with the simulations they came up with and some live video of actual incidents. I mean, or at least it looked that way to me. I wasn't sure it was live. Some of it was live. It was that good the simulations were. And we're going to actually listen to each firefighter tell their story, narrate it. You walk through it. You see it. And then they tell their story, and you actually see it. It's amazing. Amazing program. I was really moved by it yesterday. Well, let's spend a few minutes talking with some of the firefighters that are featured on To Hell and Back 2. Brian Alkire. Where are you from, Brian?
From Lafayette, Indiana.
Lafayette Fire Department, Indiana. Is that the department you were with at the time?
No, I was with the Sheffield Township Fire Department. It was a volunteer department.
Okay, so tell us what happened.
It was a structure fire involving a lightweight truss roof system. We had some firefighters that were doing some salvage of an antique vehicle inside the garage area.
Trying to salvage this car that was in there, trying to pull it out or cover it or whatever. Okay.
I noticed some fire over their head in the attic area. They were unaware of that.
You were outside?
I was outside.
Okay.
Their conditions was no heat, no smoke, no fire showing. None of the firefighters had air packs on. I noticed that the fire had gotten over their head. Went in and warned them. As I entered the structure, the truss system collapsed. Trapping me in the fire.
Were any others trapped as well?
There was one other firefighter that was trapped as well. We both self-extricated ourselves out.
You did not have a mask on?
I did not have a mask on.
Okay.
So received burns to a third degree to face, head, upper arms, forearms.
Third degree to your face, third degree to your upper arms?
Yes.
Okay. What was your percentages?
I was 19% total burn.
Third degree?
Total.
Okay.
Yeah.
They got you out. Tell us, you jumped in a porta tank.
Jumped
right?
in a porta tank
because you were on fire.
My gear was about a year old at the time, and it was completely on fire. It was actually burning itself off. The outer shell was pretty well completely gone. when I got out. It was on fire. So I jumped in a porta tank, and that's how I was cooled. And then the paramedics cut the turnout gear off and transported me to the hospital.
How now? When did this fire happen, Brian?
This was in October of 1996.
Okay, so we're 11 years ago, and you are still receiving treatments.
Yes.
And this will be treatment for life?
Yes.
Why did you get involved with To Hell and Back 2?
I think it's just
Because this is extremely personal to you.
Yes. I mean, I think it's a mission of mine is to, if there's a way that what I went through, if there's a way that we can keep it from happening to another firefighter, or raise the knowledge of what a burn injury is. That with the To Hell and Back 1, everybody says, oh, well, they were painters, they're
right.
Not firefighters. My point of that one was, yeah, they're painters, but they were burnt. Firefighter got burnt. It's the same, the burns are the same.
Well, a firefighter not wearing their PPE is the same as a painter getting burnt.
Yeah, even your PPE, you have limitations.
Some, as we talked about earlier, right?
And,
that's right.
If you exceed those limitations, then you're in the same position as the firefighter that didn't have the gear on,
right,
or a painter.
Well, we appreciate your insight, and I can tell you, those listening, when you watch this program, To Hell and Back 2, and you hear all these stories, but quite frankly, Brian Alkire's story, if this doesn't wake you up, you need to go be a baker and get out of our business. Well, let's talk to Rob Coco now. Rob, tell us about your story. Sterling Heights, Michigan, or actually your Clinton Township fire?
Yeah,
Clinton Township. Which is in that area there.
It's just north of Detroit. This happened on March 4th, 2000, in Fraser, Michigan. I was on a volunteer department to support the public safety department.
Okay.
What happened on March 4th, in a nutshell, I got 2 minutes to talk here, so I'm going to keep it short. I could probably talk for an hour, but I'm...
Well, they're going to get the video.
Oh, yeah. If they get the video, they're going
to
see it.
And it's free. I don't think we even mentioned, this is all free.
Totally free.
To Hell and Back 1, To Hell and Back 2 won't cost you a nickel.
Yeah.
If you don't have that and you're part of your fire department trading program, you're nuts. Go ahead, Rob.
Anyways, on March 4th, 2000, we responded to what had to be five or six... arson fires within 2 days for a small volunteer department. That was a lot. And
a lot for anybody.
We responded first by going to the first fire, putting it out, and then we responded to another fire 500 feet away. Saw a lady trapped in a second floor apartment, and we were waiting for a mutual aid company to come. We were going to go in with them in their attack line. We had heavy fire on the left side of the building. Heavy smoke on the top floors, heavy fire on the right side where the lady underneath the lady's apartment. We saw her hanging out the window.
You saw a lady in the building?
We saw a lady in the window.
So it's risk time, big risk time.
So we had to make a decision. Our public safety director was in the building. He was knocking on doors. He reconfirmed that there's a second a lady in the second floor. She can't get out. So Dave and I looked at each other. We decided to make a decision. Say if we're going to do this now, let's do it now. We got a couple, times inevitable here. So we masked up and went in. We said if we can't find her right away, let's get the heck out of there. We found her right away.
With or without a hose line?
Without a hose line, with no
right?
tools.
It's okay. Go ahead.
So we went to the second floor, entered in. Dave had the wall. I did the search. I heard her coughing up ahead. Went right to where she was coughing. We were in the building at that point. Grabbed her, threw her over my shoulder, and on the way out, we were Dave's packing my left hand over my right shoulder. He opened the door up and it flashed on us, blew us back 10 feet. Guys on the outside of the building said that all the windows blew out on the top floors with fire rolling out. At that point, we had to retreat.
Flashover or backdraft? Did they ever determine?
Between a flashover and a rollover, I would take.
Okay, so yeah. So the room ignited, as opposed to a smoke explosion.
Yeah, the whole room ignited instantaneously. We got blown back in, and then at that point, we had to make a critical decision. We had a couple seconds. I made the decision that the lady was not the choice we were going to have to make. We had to retreat out of the building. So we tried to make our way to the, Dave and I, got my partner. We're trying to get to the front window. We get retreated to the back bathroom area, and we got trapped in the back bathroom area. Tried to get out at that one point, and we were just basically trapped there, and we tried to get out the back. They found Dave in the back. They got him out first, and then
what happened to him?
He ended up dying in the situation.
He lost his life in the line of duty. What about the lady?
The lady died also. I was passed out in the tub underneath the window.
So you remember any of it?
I remember the whole thing.
You do, even though you're passed out.
They got Dave out first, and they didn't know I was in there for a few minutes. About 20 minutes later, they found me. They got me out of the building. Roseville helped us out with the rescue. Next thing I remember is being bagged in the back of an ambulance, and I was getting irate because I couldn't breathe that well. I was really irate, and they hit the ramp. They intubated me at the hospital. They med-flooded me to U of M Trauma Burn Center. I was there for 35 days. I had third-degree full-thickness burns. Our helmets melted to our heads.
Your helmet melted to your head?
Yeah. We had third-degree full-thickness burns over 35% of my body.
Third degree over 30%.
Yeah. And back, arms, hands, back of my neck. I didn't wear a hood. Our department had them at the time.
You were wearing a mask, though.
I wore a mask, yes.
And that saved your face and your respiratory system. That's probably why you're alive.
Yeah, definitely. Underneath the fire situation, too.
Okay.
We had a fire rolling around our heads
right.
at the window
okay.
and everything. But the...
How about your treatment?
I had some lung injuries, too, though. Wendy and I were just talking about the... they did, like, chlorofluorocarbons. They had to put in my body and suck the soot out of my lungs and things like that. But
are you still in treatment?
Not really. I 100%. Took me 15 months of a lot of therapies and
15 months of therapy.
I was getting through all the burns and everything else and getting back to work. I didn't think I was going to go back to work right away.
Okay.
My partner's mom and dad obviously kept me going. We were good friends. We were in the fire academy together.
Right.
And they kept me going through the whole thing. They said they wouldn't want you to quit. You know. And
that's
really kept me going to keep doing what I love doing.
Well, we'll be able, again, you'll hear Rob's story when you get your copy of To Hell and Back 2. And we've got one more firefighter with us. It's Brian Windsor. I've had the pleasure of teaching with Brian in the past. We've done some programs together. Brian is a full-time member of FDNY, works at 231 Engine, Watkins Street, in Brooklyn, but is a member of the very busy and very active Huntington Manor Fire District out in Suffolk County, Long Island, where you guys catch quite a bit of fire, 40, 50 jobs a year, is that close?
No, a little less.
A little less than that, but one of the busiest as far as catching some fire.
Yeah.
So it's not like you don't have some experience. What happened, Brian?
We responded to a report of a structure fire. First units on scene was a chief officer. He reported that we
had... This was a single-family dwelling?
Single-family dwelling.
Okay.
The chief arrived on scene, reported that we had a working fire.
Right.
I responded on the second due apparatus, which was a quint, which is a ladder and an engine.
Sure.
My crew was assigned to back up the first hose line team, and we ended up proceeding up to the second floor to complete a search after the first crews had water on the fire. We completed our search on the second floor, and we received a report from the incident commander that we had heavy smoke showing from the third floor.
Okay.
At this time, myself and my crew proceeded up to the third floor to do a search, see what was going on up there. And while we were operating up there, conditions had changed dramatically, and eventually, while we were trying to go to defensive operation, get everyone out of the building, the fire flashed over. I was the only one up there at the time. I was making sure that...
You went back up to make sure your crew had all gotten out.
To make sure that everyone on my crew was on their way back to the stairs. And when
your
I was on my...
officer's responsibility to take care of their people.
When I was on my way back to the stairs, the fire flashed and cut me off from my means of egress. I ended up falling through a hole in the floor where I was trapped and was extricated. I received 20% burns over my body, second and third degree. I spent about almost a month in the hospital, and I was out of work for 8 months with physical therapy and rehab before I could go back to work.
It's a pretty amazing story. There's obviously with all these stories, and Brian's I'll focus on for a minute, there were a whole lot of factors that led to this. And that's why when you watch To Hell and Back, not only you're going to hear their stories, but there's tactical discussion, there's points of what went right, what went wrong, and there's really a lot to learn from that. We appreciate your comments, Brian.
Thank you.
And so we've heard from the three of the firefighters involved in the program, and there's a couple of firefighters who are not involved because they had an incident, but because they are so focused on firefighter safety and survival. And representing the firefighters involved at the staff level is Andy Byron, who's a career firefighter in New Hampshire, well known around the fire service as Sippy, very active with Fools International. Sippy, what got you involved in this?
Well, To Hell and Back 1 got me involved into it from a point of when we go out to a pilot test, because we want to make sure that the program starts out, you know.
Well, how'd you even get involved with that?
Well, Sean came out to my area. He goes, "Hey, we're doing this program," and he talked to me about it. And I said,
"Okay,
yeah."
So he recruited you, sure.
Yeah,
good.
I'm like, "Yeah, I'll check it out. Why not?" So we checked it out.
You had free time, right? Like the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then we did the pilot test sighting because he wanted to make sure at the time and the team that they had came out, and then we did the pilot test site, and then I looked at it. I'm like, wait a minute, we can kind of change this, and we can start changing this, and then from all the other test sites, they started changing stuff. So then he asked me, he's like, "Do you mind helping out? Do you want to, you know, put some effort into it?" And I said, "Well, yeah, of course. If it's going to make a national change on something, why not?" So we jumped in the program. We revamped number one. We worked on it, and then from there on, I went to the development team of number two with probably 10 other people from out the U.S.
It's been quite an experience meeting some of the brother firefighters here, and I say brother because there are no sisters involved in this particular case, but the brothers that you talk to, kind of resets your perspective on life talking to these guys.
Oh, it's changed my attitude in the firehouse now. You know, I've kind of taken the step back and look at yourself and find out what I'm doing wrong so that I don't end up in their situation, because we spent weeks upon weeks with these guys and talking with them and discussing and basically picking their incident apart and becoming really close to them, and you have such an emotional tie to these guys now. So, and I didn't really know them until I found out about this program, and then we've done so much with them that is probably the most emotional thing that I've ever done in the fire service.
Well, I know we certainly appreciate what you're doing and the involvement that you have. Any final comments before I pass it back on to Sean for her final comments on this?
I mean, this program's out there. It's free. Use it. I mean, everybody's thinking of money this, money that, trying to get everything together and stuff. It's free. It's unbelievably. It's built for us, by us, and reviewed before
yesterday when I looked at it, again, I was honored and blessed to be a part of that program, but I never watched it. And when I saw it yesterday, it absolutely blew me away. And I certainly appreciate, you and I kid all the time, and you're one of the favorite characters in my life.
Cost you every time.
But your dedication is unquestionable and certainly appreciated. So, Sean, we've heard from your band of merry men and some of the goofiest looking people I've ever seen, I can tell you
bunch
that
of
much.
Pretty faces,
obviously,
aren't they?
All behavioral problems.
Yeah,
to you. So some final remarks for our audience, Sean.
I want to go back to what you said when we started this broadcast, Billy, and that is that, we really focus in this country on firefighter deaths, and maybe if we started focusing on the injuries, we could prevent the deaths. And as it relates most specifically to burn injuries, I mean, that's our mission. But you've heard these guys talk, 15 months, 8 months, 10 months, it's a lifelong injury. It is a lifelong injury, not just to it can literally end your career. It can end your family life. They're horrific. There's nothing else out there like it. So, if people will use the program, it is, and like Sippy said, it's free. And next week on April the 25th, we drop ship to every fire department again in the country. So, the development team has put together collateral materials, training materials, PowerPoint presentations, everything that departments need to make a turnkey training program is available online. So, I'm proud of the team. I'm proud of what they've done. And I think that with this army of people, with the army of people that we have, we'll make a difference throughout the country. And we will move through it. We will move forward with round three.
Well, we appreciate what you've done with the To Hell and Back series, especially To Hell and Back 2. I'm telling you, you cannot wait to see this. Talk to your chief. Talk to whoever gets the mail at your firehouse. Watch for it. Don't let it end up in some pile. Watch it for yourself when it arrives, and then get it and engage it as a part of your department training program. We'll be back in just a second with our third segment. We're going to be talking with some folks on firefighter body scanning and how it relates to everything we just talked about and how it relates to you and the seatbelts in your apparatus, not to mention other stuff as well from an ergonomic standpoint, your hand tools, your steps, your seating, everything. It'll be a pretty interesting discussion related to firefighter body scanning. We'll be right back. This is Through the Smoke. We're live at FDIC 2007.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. We're live at FDIC. We're going to talk now for a couple of minutes with a young lady by the name of Jennifer Whitestone. She's here with Jen Manning, who works with her as well, and Mike Wilbur, who you've had on, who certainly has his own radio show, Apparatus Architects, on RadioFirehouse.com. But Mike also is a dear friend of mine, and Mike's very involved in the seatbelt issue. We're going to talk with Jen Whitestone. Jen is the CEO of a company called Total Contact Incorporated, and they're involved in body measuring and body 3D scanning, and they're going to be working on a project to provide new guidelines to improve the fit and performance of all safety equipment for firefighters. And this data is going to be publicly available for unrestricted use. It's a pretty exciting project. Now, some of you may have seen some links or heard us talk in the past over the last couple months about firefighters being needed to do body scanning. And that's what we're really going to talk about here. But you're also involved. Tell us how your company got started. First of all, welcome, Jen.
Thank you. Thank you. On behalf of Jennifer Manning and Mike, we appreciate the opportunity to talk.
And Gordon. Don't leave Gordon.
We'll get
like a Canadian grievance filed or something like that. Tell us what got you involved in doing body scanning.
Sure. I worked for the Air Force for about 12 years. We were using, first let me set you up with a couple definitions. Anthropometry, which you'll hear me mention quite a few times, is the science of measuring the body. 3D anthropometry is the science of measuring the body with a really cool three-dimensional surface scanning system. So we were using that at the Air Force to help pilots with their helmets and their protective equipment and their G-suits for many years. When a friend of mine was burned, and I used the same scanning technology and some prototyping methods to create a burn mask for him to treat what was resulting hypertrophic scars on his face and neck.
Why you? Why did you do a burn mask? Weren't burn masks available?
Burn masks are available. Generally, they're made with a plaster technique called moulage, where you lay the patient down and put plaster on their face and create an impression.
Oh.
So it's very uncomfortable for kids and many adults. They really can't sit through the process. It's about 30 to 40 minutes. So they're anesthetized, they're intubated. It's very uncomfortable and it's very inaccurate, and the resulting masks oftentimes don't fit.
So you came up with a way to do scanning to accomplish the same thing?
Correct.
Wow. Okay, I didn't even realize that. This is the first time I realized that. Okay.
Yeah, in about 7 seconds, they sit in a chair. It's just like a dental x-ray, and the camera takes a 3D picture of their face, and from that we create a mask that fits them exactly.
Unbelievable.
And what that does is, if the mask fits them, they're likely to wear it. If they're wearing the mask, then they are receiving the benefits of pressure therapy, which is eliminating and minimizing scars in their face and neck. And,
all right, so you got this project going. You got the face, primarily the burn injury scanning going on. Where'd the fire service come from? Do you have like a kitchen fire or something?
Well, really we've been working with the fire service because as we put these scanning systems into burn centers, the model is we put a scanner into a burn center, we train the therapist.
Okay, so there's your connection.
Yeah.
Okay.
We train the therapist how to use the scanners. They scan the patient, email the data to us. We create the mask and ship it back to them. We can do this in one day. But a lot of the firefighters have been involved in the process because the burn centers can't necessarily afford to purchase the scanning system. So the firefighters in many cities will step up to the plate and say, what does the burn center need? We'll raise the money, we'll do whatever it takes to get them this technology.
Okay.
Because we care about the burn patients. So we've gotten to know the firefighting industry pretty well through that. Working on the Phoenix Society, which is a society for burn survivors, and met Ron Sarnicky, who's the executive director of the
National Fallen Firefighters.
He became aware of the kind of technology that we have and the sort of applications that we do. And at that point was talking to Mike Wilbur and Gordon Routley about their issue with fire engine seats and seat belts and how...
Well, let's tie it right to that. Let's go there now. So we know that the seat belts we have today are not designed... They're car seat belts put in fire trucks. We know that some apparatus seats are designed for, you know, someone who weighs 100 pounds and is, you know, 6 inches wide.
That's correct.
What are you doing to help solve that problem? What's the project?
Well, as we were researching this project, it was brought to our attention by Mike and Gordon. And as we started to look into this, we realized that the seats are designed based on specifications that are over 30 years old. And what's worse is that those specifications are based on military body size data of individuals in their shorts. So no street clothes, no turnout gear.
So that's why you like doing this.
Of course.
There's a whole other issue
here.
There's
another motive.
That'll be another show.
But in the last three decades, we as a population have increased by an inch a decade. So we're taller. Firefighters, on average, are heavier than all the other non-military occupations combined by as much as 22 to 25 pounds. So they're bigger people. They're taller than they were 30 years ago. And then we've added the street clothes and the turnout gear and, you know, the SCBAs and the straps. And you're trying to sit on a seat that's based on something, specifications that are the 30-year-old specs. So it doesn't add up. It doesn't work. What's been really interesting about this project is, as we met with Mike and Gordon, we sat down with NIOSH. NIOSH is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health.
Right.
Their mission is to help all the workers in the U.S., and they have done a very good job of that in terms of body size issues, but they have neglected the firefighters. And had identified this problem at the same time that we met with them. It had just come up on their radar, and they decided that they needed to measure the firefighters as a population because this has never been done. Of all the non-military occupations, the firefighters have been the one group that have never been measured.
So you get this information. You're going to collect all this data, and you come up with firefighters are this many inches wide, this many inches tall, yada, yada. Where does it go from there?
Well, what we're doing now is what's called a pilot study, and that is basically a means of determining what type of measurement techniques are required to capture the entire firefighting population. As we investigate this, we found that there are more and more minorities in the firefighting industry. There are more women, and we're gathering a subsample of that population. So out of 1 million firefighters that are now in the U.S., we're going to measure roughly 180 firefighters, but that very small population will represent the demographics of the current U.S. firefighting population.
So that's why I've been looking at African-American, Hispanic,
yes,
women,
correct.
Men, the whole thing.
That's correct.
Asian, the whole, okay. Whatever is out there.
That's right.
You're basically a cross-section of America.
It is.
All right.
And we are developing the methodologies with which to capture that data. For instance, as they come in, we measure traditional dimensions such as stature, waist circumference, sitting height, and then we scan them with a three-dimensional scanner, and we're scanning them in a...
All right, so does scanning hurt? I mean, what's the process?
The process is the firefighter will simply step up on a platform that's approximately 6 inches off the floor and stand motionless for 15 seconds while cameras take a picture of their body from head to toe. And we scan them standing and seated in a fire engine seat. Then we outfit them with their street clothes and turnout gear, and they repeat the process. They stand on the platform, we scan them standing, and again seated. From those data, we'll be collecting measurements that are related to the seatbelt issues. So we'll be able to derive engineering tools for manufacturers of fire engine seats, for manufacturers of the seatbelts, and really from that point forward for any protective equipment.
So currently fire truck seats are just, someone said this is what our seat should look like. this is where grab rail should be, this is whatever. So you're bringing science, real proof, to back up, well, that seat isn't wide enough, that seat isn't cushioned enough, that grab rail isn't in the right spot. Mm-hmm. And again, this information is going to be free.
That's correct.
All your data.
Actually, the information will belong to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Right.
And they're able to contact the NFFF.
Eventually. When do you think this is going to be done?
We'll be finished this fall.
Wow.
And the data will be available for the manufacturers in a form that they can import it into their design process. So if they currently have a certain CAD system that they use, they'll be able to pull the measurements in and use them directly.
So now our listeners, which are primary firefighters and fire departments, will they be able to use this information by saying, hey, we're designing a new pumper, we want our new pumper to match this project?
Absolutely. Yes.
Wow. So it could be pretty soon.
That's right. It will be available in the fall.
To manufacturers also, though, too.
To the manufacturers.
Who may or may not be able to make changes based upon federal standards, federal regulations, NFPA stuff. I mean, like, I guess they just can't change the designs of their seatbelts tomorrow. Aren't there some federal standards that say your seatbelt must do this, this, and this?
Yes.
Okay.
However, I would think that once the data are available, and what's nice about the survey that we're doing currently, and this is considered an anthropometric survey, is it's very small, but it is going to really lay the groundwork for the full-scale, large, national NIOSH survey of firefighters.
Okay, it'll be a segment of that whole study.
They are
okay.
Starting in the fall as we conclude this study. So the methodologies that we develop, the techniques, we're going to train them directly how to collect the data, and they will be going nationwide scanning firefighters all over the U.S.
Unbelievable.
Looking at more like a couple thousand firefighters. And you know, ultimately creating a report that will be stamped with NIOSH saying, this is how big the firefighter is. This is how tall he or she stands. This is the size of their body dimensions. This is how far they can reach. You know, some of the more ergonomic aspects of the firefighters.
So this is really going to have a significant impact in the next 2 to 3 years. Locally, if I was ordering equipment or apparatus, I could take what you produced this fall and say, hey, manufacturer, I would like my new blank to include these features to meet the points identified in the study.
Correct.
Wow, outstanding.
And, you know, the timing is really ideal in the sense that NIOSH has picked this up and decided this is the torch that they're carrying this year. And also, I think that we have sort of practiced this technique on other occupations, on the farmers, on construction workers. So it's
and have
a solid
they changed
technique.
Stuff?
Yes, they have. We've improved fall protection harness. We've improved rollover protection for farmers. The time is right for firefighters. And, in fact, the time is overdue, but at least you know,
sure.
We're getting it up and running and things are going along. In fact, we've scanned Mike, and he is subject number one.
Mike Wilver. Well, that's great information. We appreciate you sharing that with us today. Any final comments on this?
Yeah, I'd like for Jennifer Manning to...
Okay, so let's talk to Jennifer Manning now. Jennifer, you work with Jen Whitestone at Total Contact. And what's your role with this whole project?
In this project, my role is to recruit the firefighters and collect their data... their paper data, not their three-dimensional data, and figure out who we need from the firefighter population to include in the study based on those stats.
And who do you need?
We need everybody. We need to represent. So far what I've gathered is I have a female that's 4'11 and weighs 100 pounds soaking wet. I also have a guy that's 6'9 and a bodybuilder. We've got to make sure that we accommodate everybody across the board.
So the 4'11" female firefighter might have to ride in the same apparatus seat as the 6' what?
Nine
bodybuilder.
Yes.
On a different shift. That actually puts it in perspective. That, I mean, she may be in this teeny seat. I mean, she may be teeny in this big seat, but she's also got to safely fit in that same
right.
seat.
Right. We've got to keep her safe and him safe.
With the same, using the same seat belt.
Right.
So it's got to fit a certain way. That's fascinating to me. Anyway.
And in addition, they might also be, you know, engineers too. So she might drive on A shift and then turn around, and he might drive on B shift. So there's a lot of other issues.
The driver's seat, the officer's seat, the grab rails. Here we go. Yes, it ties it, right in now.
Full circle.
Okay,
yes.
Very good.
But
so
also,
what are you looking? Go ahead, yeah.
Also, what we need to include is body size and proportions are definitely related across the board to ethnicity. So we need to make sure that we can include Asian firefighters, Black firefighters, Hispanic firefighters, female firefighters who are also of, you know, the minorities, so that we can accommodate people who have tall sitting heights and short legs, or the opposite of that, long legs and short sitting heights. And those are directly related to ethnicities. And that population we have to capture, even though they represent 25% of the 1 million that are out there.
Very, very interesting. And they can contact you by the link below. They can send fill out the little form, and then you'll be in contact with them.
They can call me or email me. And
we've got that information
the more
on the
merrier.
Website.
Even though, you know, a guy from Alaska is not going to want to, you know, drive his car to Dayton, Ohio to participate.
And you're doing this at Wright-Patt Air Force Base.
Yes, sir. State-of-the-art equipment. We still would like everybody's height, weight, age, and race.
And you're paying a small fee for those who participate
as well. Yes, they do get compensated, yes.
Very good. Outstanding information. So, Jennifer Whitestone, give us some final comments on why you want firefighters to go to this website, sign up, earn a little spending cash, and contribute to the mission.
It's so important that they get on board with this, because the changes are coming and they're happening. And the firefighters can be a big part of this. This is really, these are your protective equipment items. These are your fire apparatus, seatbelts, handrails. It's your time to make sure that the next generation of products that come out fit you, fit your sons, fit your daughters, fit your generation and the following generations of firefighters. And anthropometry data is historically held for decades. So the information we're currently using was collected 30 years ago. So whatever we collect now will be used for decades to come. And it's important that we all get on board. And it's important that the manufacturers get on board, because it is happening. Changes are coming, and it's time to protect the firefighters.
Well, thank you for your time, both Jen Whitestone and Jen Manning, and Mike Wilbur, who's working, and Gordon Routley, of course, involved in the project. We're live at FDIC 2007. Our thanks to Total Fire Group Morning Pride for allowing us to use their booth and their conference room here at the booth. Thanks to our guests, Wendy Norris from the Phoenix Project Online.com, the People's Burn Foundation, Sean Longrich, Sean Grass, Brian Windsor, Rob Coco, Andy Byron Sippy, and Andy Sippy Byron, and of course, Brian Alkier. And especially to Jen Whitestone and Jen Manning, who spent time with us at the latter part of the show. I want to remind you again, we're helping to raise some money for the Chief Ray Downey Scholarship Fund, as well as the National Fallen Firefighters, by selling the Beat Goes On video. It's a firefighter safety and survival clip, or a video filled with clips that you can use in training. But most importantly, I guess, I want to dedicate this week's show in the memory of Firefighter Kyle Wilson of the Prince William County Fire and Rescue Department, who gave his life doing what you do, doing what we do, searching for indications of people being trapped in that house because the cars were in the driveway early in the morning, and he lost his life when fire condition turned was unable to get out. And also our hearts go out to the members of the Blacksburg Fire Department, the Blacksburg Rescue Squad, and especially the Virginia Tech Rescue Squad, which is a student-based emergency service unit, providing EMS. But I guess finally, more importantly than anyone else I just mentioned, the families and loved ones of those who were murdered at Virginia Tech last week. Take care. We'll see you soon. This is Billy Goldfeder, your host, radio at firehouse.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio at firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.